This law states that for every suggestion, thought, or emotion one entertains, there is a corresponding physiological and chemical response within the body. This is the most important law of the mind in regard to birthing. According to psychologist Candace Pert, the body is the action component of the mind. What is experienced in the body is determined in the mind. Therefore, what the mind chooses to accept or perceive as being real, the robot body, accordingly, responds to. The mind does not have the ability to act. Therefore, it sends messages to the body demanding action. The body, in turn, plays out the thought. Pavlov's experiment with the dogs that eventually became conditioned to salivate at the ringing of a bell in anticipation of receiving food is perhaps the most commonly recognized example of this mind-body connection. We experience this law almost every day of our lives. I'm sure it would not be difficult for you to recall any number of incidents when a loud, sudden noise or the unexpected appearance of a person or an object in your path caused you to startle, duck, draw back, or involuntarily cry out. A dad in one of my classes described experiencing an instant and noticeable physical response when seeing the flashing lights of a police car in his rearview mirror at a time when he was driving well beyond the speed limit. It was not until he pulled over to the side of the road and the policeman continued past him that he became aware of how strong a physiological effect his thoughts had created within his body. He could feel the accelerated pounding of his heart, the dampness accruing at his underarms, the white knuckle grip he had on the steering wheel, and the long, continuous intake of breath without exhaling. He was also hugely aware of the relief he felt as he exhaled and his shoulders receded back into the frame of his body. When the mind no longer perceived that he was being threatened, he relaxed back into a state of calm. Of course, the most obvious example of the psychophysical response is the one that has brought you to hypnobirthing class to prepare for your baby's birth. Sexual arousal. When the mind entertains a sexual thought and a subsequent visualization, the body responds by preparing for the sex act with the male experiencing penile erection and the female experiencing lubrication of the vaginal wall. This all comes naturally, with the robot body acting out the desires of the mind. It is part of the master plan for all reproduction. Utilizing this law of the mind so that it works with you and for you and not against you during your birthing is essential. If the mind is dwelling on fearful, negative images of birth, the body is thrown unintentionally into a defense mode. The physical response then becomes the antithesis to normal birthing, tension. You will become skilled in using your own natural abilities to bring your mind and body into psychophysical harmony so that the thoughts you use in practice are those that will condition your body and your mind to create endorphins, those neuropeptides that create a feeling of well-being. You will learn special deepening techniques that will help you to connect with your baby and work with your body to bring yourself even deeper as your labor advances. The law of repetition. Since repetition is the key to conditioning, the law of repetition becomes an important aspect of your preparation. The more you take a single thought and express it mentally or out loud, the more deeply it becomes ingrained in your mind's eye, and the more readily the mind accepts it as reality. Had Pavlov rung the bell once or twice or only on occasion, the dog would not have been able to make the association of the ringing of the bell with receiving food or a treat, and he would not have salivated. Therefore, it is important that you routinely recite the birthing affirmations that your practitioner will provide you in your class and that are recorded on the Rainbow Relaxation CD or MP3 that can be purchased as an accompaniment to this audiobook. The Law of Harmonious Attraction, The Power of Language. Words and thoughts are powerful and profoundly affect our everyday experiences and beliefs. Equally significant is the harm that is created by the negative energy of the confusing, harsh, and frightening words of conventional birthing. A second law of the mind, the law of harmonious attraction, is very much in evidence here. This law states that what we put out in the way of thinking and speaking creates energy that comes back to us in the same form in subsequent experiences. This is what I call the echo effect or the boomerang effect. Whatever thought or emotion you throw out to the world will come back to you exactly as you first proposed it. Applying this law on a daily basis is important. The best advice, according to Esther Hicks in the Abraham Hicks material, is if it's not what you're wanting, don't go there. Words have energy, power, and vibrations that translate into action. Regardless of whether you are the person speaking or the person being spoken to, the sound and vibration of what is being said cause an emotional response within your mind and a physiological and chemical response within your mind-body. Over time, the frequency of that response becomes part of your belief system, strengthening itself each time a similar vibration is accepted. It then attracts more of the same. Even when we silently engage in self-talk, our words have force. Each time we speak to ourselves in a less than complimentary way, "Are you stupid or what?" or use similar self-denigrating words, we leave an imprint of inadequacy upon our subconscious. You can see this demonstrated as you listen to the people around you. Notice that healthy people rarely speak of becoming ill. However, people who are not healthy frequently punctuate their conversation with talk of their physical ailments. Think about the phrase, "the rich get richer and the poor get poorer." Rich people don't often speak of being poor or not being able to afford goods. On the other hand, poor people, or people who think poor, regularly end thoughts of spending with the phrase, "I can't afford it." They remain in that situation and go through life affording very little. It is therefore essential that you keep your thoughts and language focused on what you do want, rather than creating wasted negative energy around circumstances that you don't want. The little ditty that you may have heard on the playground when you were a child, "Sticks and stones may break my bones, but names will never hurt me," may be a good comeback as a temporary defense against words that sting. But physiologically, it is not true. Caustic, belittling, frightening, and abusive words do indeed hurt and can cause a lasting imprint. Tell a baby just learning to walk or beginning to accomplish tasks on his own that he is clumsy or a klutz, and after a while, the child begins to feel clumsy and moves in ways that are clumsy. Tell him that his everyday normal bodily functions are smelly and disgusting, and he begins to feel bad about his body and himself for having created a disgusting situation. The negative imprint takes hold, stays with him, and grows. The more potent the thought, the more potent the imprint. Concepts that you are exposed to repeatedly in many places and from many sources become part of a conditioning that becomes embedded in your thoughts over time. The law of repetition governs that process. It is important for you to recognize that frequency does not necessarily equal fact. The association of pain with childbirth is an example of a universally held conditioning, and it has become the source of needless suffering because of the myths that have grown up around it. By the same token, if you listen to affirmations of positive, gentle birth on a daily basis, it will contribute to positive conditioning. Words and suggestions set off a chain of feelings, beliefs, and reactions that can be uplifting, encouraging, and supportive, or totally debilitating. Words create thoughts and emotions. Repeatedly entertaining the same thoughts conjures up feelings. Over time, these feelings become beliefs. We begin to act out those beliefs by our behavior. Our behavior shapes our experiences. Positive behavior creates positive experiences. Negative behavior creates negative experiences. Hence, in hypnobirthing, we focus only on the positive. For all of these reasons, hypnobirthing parents learn to use language that more nearly describes what is happening within the birthing mother's body during birth. This gentle language is more meaningful to parents than language that is couched in medical academicism, appropriate for the medical caregivers in communicating with each other, but frightening and potentially harmful to the birthing family. The language you use and the language you hear from people around you, including caregivers and childbirth educators, keeps your mind in a state of calm, or conversely, triggers a state of unrest, stress, and fear. Learn to choose your words carefully and associate with people who reinforce your own positive thinking about birthing. If you are being bombarded by people who want to tell you birth horror stories, suggest that you wait until after you have your baby to exchange birth stories. Don't get pulled into those kinds of conversations. This kind of thinking, speaking, and living, as well as the support that you give to each other, will help you to work together toward a positive birth experience. This calmness will be there for you during birthing, and it spills over into every aspect of your family life. To truly embrace the concept of gentle, normal birth, learn to think and speak in the kinder, softer word substitutes that appear on the list that follows. As you become accustomed to this language, you will become aware of the importance of this mental transition. Use uterine surge or waves instead of contractions. Birth companion instead of coach. Receive the baby instead of catch the baby. Birth or birthing instead of deliver or delivery. Birthing time or month instead of due date. Precious or sensation tightening instead of pain or contractions. Membranes release instead of water breaking or rupturing. Birth path instead of birth canal. Birth breathing instead of pushing. Special circumstances instead of complications. Uterine seal instead of mucus plug. Birth show instead of bloody show. Near completion or nearly complete instead of transition. Thinning opening instead of effacing or dilating. Preborn or unborn baby instead of fetus. First or second time mom instead of primip or multip. Perineal rim unfolds instead of perineal rim stretches. Parents instead of clients or patients. Pre-labor warm-ups instead of Braxton Hicks. Pelvic floor exercises instead of Kegels. Newborn instead of neonate. Resting labor instead of stalled or shut down labor. Practice labor instead of false labor. Birth-savvy mothers who value totally unmedicated and intervention-free birthing have a new term for it, pure birth. William and Martha Sears, The Birth Book. It is this kind of birth that we refer to as instinctual. The law of motivation. What you want is what you get. The law of motivation also affects the physical body's capabilities. We have all read accounts of nearly impossible feats accomplished by people who risked their own lives to save the life of a child. When the mind is highly motivated, the body responds properly. Consider the football player who sprains an ankle at the beginning of the last quarter of the game. Because his conscious attention and motivation is totally focused on playing the game and winning, he may feel the pressure of the swelling of the ankle, but feels no pain. His mind has narrowed its focus and is accepting only the suggestion that he must remain in the game and play his hardest. His ankle does not accept the sharp twist as a source of pain because only the mind is able to think or react to pain stimuli. If there is no pain stimuli, he feels no pain. It is not until the game is over and the motivation to pull all of his energy into winning the game is no longer necessary that his mind is directed. The message of the sprain is relayed to the mind. The mind interprets it and sends it back, and he begins to feel the discomfort. When we examine motivation to see how it affects the way in which a woman births, we need only to look at a story that received national news coverage several years ago. It involved a very pregnant young woman who was attending a prom when she went into labor. She excused herself, left the dance floor, and went into the ladies' room where she proceeded to have her baby, quickly, quietly, and unbeknownst to anyone else. Her fear of being detected created a motivation far stronger than any fear she may have regarding the birth. And she was able to return to the prom activities after only a brief period of labor. Her mind never accepted or even considered that there would be any impediments to this birth or that she would experience the long, typical labor that our society has come to expect, especially for a woman having a first baby. While it is difficult to believe, we sometimes see the reverse of the previous example. If motivation is accompanied by a secondary benefit, a person can actually bring about what for most people would be an unwanted situation, an illness, a bad outcome, a hardship. Without consciously being aware of it, victims of the secondary benefit can create circumstances that allow them to accomplish what they consider is a better end, even though it means they endure less than optimal circumstances. Could the need for attention create motivation for a high-maintenance pregnancy? It definitely can, and occasionally does. If a pregnant woman wants and needs to be pampered, waited upon, and coddled, and buys into the concept that pregnancy is an abnormal condition and she is ill, the attention that she gains during a troublesome pregnancy and a difficult birthing can definitely make it all worthwhile in her mind. She barely tolerates her pregnancy and constantly proclaims her annoyance at all the aches, pains, and other pregnancy disorders, while she uses body language that demonstrates her plight. Family members often contribute to this scenario by cautioning the woman that she must give in to her frailty during this precarious time of her life. Several years ago, a mom came to my classes talking about the horrendously long and difficult births her mother and all of the women in her family experienced. This was the centerpiece of her conversation week after week. As I got to know her family, I saw that all the women in the family talked in victim language. In spite of the fact that their birth stories were horrific, they were delighted to tell all of the details, each one surpassing the other, and each rushing in to grab her opportunity to tell how bad her pregnancies and birthings were. The mom and dad appeared to embrace the hypnobirthing philosophy, but I was not surprised that her birthing story was one that could easily match and top those of her family members. The drama surrounding the birth was incredible, and there was a gathering of family and friends invited in to observe the performance. It was more important for this young woman to be able to remain in good standing in the sorority of her family and friends than it was to remain outside the group and to birth her baby calmly and peacefully as she had prepared. This is not to say that all labors that are drawn out and difficult have behind them some secondary benefit. Nevertheless, it is important to assess your own motivation and intent as you approach your birthing, and consider, in light of all we've spoken of here, how you will apply these laws of the mind so that they work for you. Motivation is closely tied to your intent and your self-image. It is said that a woman births pretty much the same way that she lives life. For that reason, it is imperative that you take the time to do an assessment of how you see yourself and whether this image is productive for you or counterproductive. Much of the determining aspects of how you will make important choices concerning your birthing are factored on how you regard birth and your own role in this experience. Two models, the whole person model and the dependent model, determine how you will approach your pregnancy and birthing. Review each model and evaluate which traits you want to strengthen and expand upon as you make important decisions regarding your baby and your birthing. The model you choose to follow will be invaluable to you as you continue your adventure into pregnancy, birthing, and lifelong parenting. The following are examples of dependent model versus whole person model. Uninformed or unknowing versus knowledgeable. Submissive versus powerful. Passive onlooker versus involved. Conforming versus forward thinking. Reconciled versus fulfilled. Easily led versus directing. Vulnerable versus trusting. Helpless versus self-sufficient. Vacillating versus decisive. Threatened versus confident. Embarrassed versus assertive. Resigned versus satisfied. Understanding self-hypnosis. There is a considerable amount of misinformation and a terrible lack of good information surrounding self-hypnosis. This is because the only exposure that many people have had to hypnosis in general is what they've seen as entertainment, stage hypnosis. Without going into detail, I will simply remind you that the people who are on the stage during a stage show are volunteers, there to have a good time. Since all hypnosis is self-hypnosis, it is easy for them to accept the roles that the hypnotist suggests to them. They're having fun. Contrary to what is portrayed in movies and literature, it is impossible to cause someone to do something that is against his morals or his principles while he is participating in hypnosis. If a suggestion were to be made that is contrary to any value that a person holds, the person would immediately revert to an alert state and refuse to carry out the directive. What many people may not know is that hypnosis is being used to benefit people in many medical, dental, and therapeutic applications. Hypnosis is widely used to help people release fears, overcome the discomfort of the effects of chemotherapy, prepare for surgery, stop stuttering, end nail biting, and a host of other annoying habits. Hypnosis is so effective that it was recognized in 1957 by the American Medical Association as a beneficial therapy for many physical and emotional needs. Hypnosis is a very natural state that most of us exist in during a large part of our day. When we become engrossed with our work and lose track of time or of what is going on around us, that is hypnosis. We are in a hypnotic state when we get caught up in daydreams or become so immersed in a movie or a television show that we emotionally react to what the actors are experiencing. When you are in hypnosis during your labor, you'll be able to hear conversations and may or may not wish to join in. Though you will be totally relaxed, you will also be fully in control. To the person who is not familiar with self-hypnosis, you may even appear as though you've taken some kind of medication to put you into this profoundly relaxed state. During your birthing, you will be aware of your uterine surges, but you will experience them comfortably and with the knowledge that you are very much in charge. You'll be able to interrupt your relaxation whenever you wish and resume it whenever you wish. As your labor moves nearer to birth, you will most likely choose to go even deeper within to your birthing body and your baby so that together you can work in harmony through birth. Though you will not be able to visually experience it, you will be able to physically know that your baby is very much a birth partner in this adventure. When you are tuned into your body, you will sense and know exactly what you and your baby are doing. You'll become skilled in using your own natural abilities to bring your mind and body into perfect harmony. You will gain an understanding of the physiology of labor that goes beyond what is usually taught in other classes. You will learn special relaxation conditioning and labor techniques that will enable you to connect with and work with your body and your baby as you experience labor. The repetitive practice of these techniques will make it possible for you to instantly achieve this relaxation and maintain it for as long as you wish through labor. The value of self-hypnosis comes from learning to reach that level of mind where suggestions that you give yourself effectively influence your physiological experience. Your hypnobirthing practitioner will help you learn to reach this level where you focus only on calm and comfort. You will see, hear, and practice these techniques in class and will be given practice tapes or CDs that you will work with on a daily basis at home. Your birth companion will also be given scripts to use when you practice together 2 or 3 times a week. There is no magic benefit that accrues from just coming to classes. You must be willing to apply the practice that is required to reach these levels of relaxation that will be there for you when you are in labor. These skills will be applicable to many facets of your life, as well as for the birthing of your child. Many couples find that the months of preparation in relaxation benefit them in the way they deal with day-to-day situations and have a positive effect on how they interact with each other. A mom who was in one of my classes said, "I came to hypnobirthing to learn how to have a baby, and I learned how to have a life." It's that powerful if you learn to utilize it. Relaxation also has a calming effect upon the baby. Mellow is the word many parents use when describing their babies. We like to think they are better natured. Falling in love with your baby. Leave it to a baby to turn your world upside down, take your breath away, and make you fall in love again. With his toothless grin, your baby sets your heart on fire. Jan Blaustone, The Joy of Parenthood. We know that calm, soothing thoughts and emotions have a bearing on the way in which you bring your baby into the world. Love is one of the most important emotions in helping to build a positive anticipation. The love that you as parents feel for each other, and the love that you actively share with the baby that you are carrying. When is the best time for you to fall in love with your baby? If you haven't already fallen madly in love with your baby and are not playing and communicating with her on a daily basis, now is the time. Getting acquainted with your baby is a very magical experience, and you don't have to wait until she is born to enjoy making this connection. Once your baby is born, you wouldn't think of going about your daily routine without making time for frequent breaks that are especially devoted to talking, playing, and loving her. Babies have a way of drawing that kind of attention from family members and strangers alike. No one can resist their magnetic charm, so compelling it can bring activities and conversation to a screeching halt. You can begin to connect socially and emotionally with your unborn baby as soon as you know that you are pregnant. In addition to making your pregnancy so much more enjoyable and exciting when you tune in to this little person who has become part of your life, you lay the foundation for a relationship that can last for the rest of your lives. Pre-birth parenting activities tell your baby that he is welcome and wanted. The idea that both parents influence their preborn baby is neither supposition nor superstition. The close bond that is built while the baby is still in the womb can be very real when it is time to connect with your baby during birthing. Thanks to the relatively young study of fetology advanced during the late 70s and early 80s by Dr. Thomas Vierney in his book, The Secret Life of the Unborn Child, We know that babies are cognizant during their time in the womb. All of baby's womb life is actually his first classroom. There, he learns lessons and develops emotionally, physically, spiritually, and socially. Parents should do all they can to be sure that the baby's emotional development, his sense of well-being, and his esteem as a loved being are being fostered through caring and consistent pre-birth parenting. The 9 months that the baby spends in the womb are 9 months of growth and development for parents as well. They learn the importance of evolving as a family, and moms learn the importance of planning and working together with their babies toward achieving the goal of a gentle birth for both baby and mother. Dr. David Chamberlain, author of Babies Remember Birth, later published as The Mind of Your Newborn Baby, spent many years investigating the effects of birth trauma upon a baby. He states that babies are active participants in birth, and they do remember their birth experience. The imprint of that experience is carried throughout their lives. All one has to do is gaze into the alert, knowing eyes of a newborn who has not been drugged during her journey into being, and it is immediately evident that there is a lot of thought going on. Without saying a word, the baby transmits a message. I know. Pre- and perinatal psychology is a branch of research that focuses on the effects of environment upon the baby as he is developing within the womb and during the birthing experience. Ongoing study is attempting to determine the degree to which a baby in the uterus is affected by the environment in which he is living and the manner in which his parents interact with him and each other. While we know that everything the mother puts into her body crosses the placenta and affects the baby, this is also true of emotions. When we offer the preborn baby love, play, and music, we reinforce his positive feelings of security. On the negative side, it's been found that the pulse rate of the unborn baby rises abruptly when the baby is exposed to screaming, yelling, loud or disturbing noises, and emotional upsets. Be aware of the kind of environment and experiences you are providing for your unborn baby. It is so important that dads get involved in nurturing both mother and baby, and that mothers recognize the need for nurturing both dad and baby. Reciprocal nurturing of one parent for the other sends a strong message of security to their preborn baby. This is a loving family. As a result of Virney's studies and those of his colleagues, it was found that babies in the womb react to stimuli outside of the uterus. Intentionally initiating certain kinds of interaction and love play can result in positive prenatal, perinatal, and postnatal bonding. Findings suggest that babies within the womb react to vibrations, stroking, tapping, rubbing, squeezing, conversation, voices, music, light, heat, cold, pressing to simulate the birth experience, teasing, loud noises, TV sounds, and humor. Babies who were exposed to soft music and singing during their time in the womb were calmer, happier, and better adjusted to life outside of the womb. It is also believed that they are better sleepers. Babies love the sound of their parents' voices, especially when they are sung to. Some mothers report that while singing to their preborn babies, the babies responded with a gentle moving action. Music has vibration that babies are sensitive to. If the vibration is gentle and calming, they have a feeling of well-being. Dr. Michael Lazarev, a leading Russian pediatrician, emphasizes the importance of helping the baby to become familiar with musical sounds. He concluded that if you listen to your unborn baby, he will let you know what activities and sounds he prefers. In a study at the University of Salzburg, mothers who developed a real sense of being connected with their preborn babies and who interacted with the babies in talk and play tended to view their bodies with an air of pride and fully accepted their increasing size as a natural part of the development of the baby. Fathers who were involved in bonding displayed the same kind of awe with respect to the shape of the mother's body and the development taking place inside. There was a respect for the life being carried in the womb. Overall, their pregnancies seemed to be easier, as were their birthings. They approached birthing with a relaxed confidence. Later, both parents seemed to adopt a softer, more balanced attitude toward caregiving. Parents displayed greater feelings of enjoyment, love, and respect for each other and for the baby. The benefits to babies were also profound. There were fewer premature births and fewer low birth weight babies. Reports showed a noticeable increase in the socialization of the babies who experienced pre-birth parenting. Overall, health and weight gain were very positive. Hypnobirthing parents tell us that their young babies hardly cry and are exceptionally alert. I believe that one of the most important advantages of pre-birth parenting to the baby is that when parents truly connect in attitude as a family prior to the birth of the baby, they accept the responsibility for planning and directing their births. They are as committed to ensuring the safety and comfort of the baby during its journey into the world as they are when their baby is part of their family outside the womb. I also believe that pre-birth parenting helps them become practiced in accepting the responsibility of parenting later. Knowing that the baby is fully aware of its surroundings and the people who are his parents, it is only reasonable that the baby also thrives when there is interaction and socialization with the people with whom he lives. Recommendations for pre-birth parenting. Learn the suggested relaxation techniques and practice them daily. Baby needs peace too. Since baby is aware, he is listening to the music and calming suggestions at the same time as his mom. Play with baby physically. Sway, sway, sway. Dance, dance, dance. Rub, rub, rub. Pat, pat, pat. Squeeze, squeeze, squeeze. Press, press, press. All done gently. Use guided imagery and visualization. Carry on conversations with baby. Say affirmations, read stories with animation and imitation of animal sounds, play children's tapes. While relaxing in the tub, massage your belly with lukewarm water and sing or talk to your baby. Play soothing music, sounds of ocean, birds, wind, soft piano, guitar, madrigals, flute, harp, nature sounds, and animal sounds, so that baby develops a wider awareness of these things. Have family and friends greet and interact with baby. Put yourself in the baby's frame of reference. How wholesome are the surrounding noises, voices, attitudes, emotions, foods, temperatures, air, odors? Prenatal bonding exercises. Important facets of the hypnobirthing program are the discussions and exercises for parents that help them to truly connect and fall in love with their preborn baby. These activities help the parents develop a sensitivity to how the baby perceives his surroundings and often cause them to evaluate how their lifestyle, their emotional well-being, and their relationship with each other can impact the baby's emotional development and sense of feeling loved and secure. Relaxation lessons and image-building tools for both parents help them develop a stronger sense of their own self-worth, as well as serve as meditations that will help them bond with their preborn baby. The time spent with these guided images may prove to be among the most valuable gifts that you can give to yourself and your baby. Another way to establish a connection with your baby and to explore his world is to take part in the following exercise. We call it Be the Baby, because we ask you to imagine yourself in the role of the baby in the womb, experiencing what life is like for the baby. As the practitioner leads you through this exercise, Take advantage of the opportunity to think about how your unborn baby might respond to these questions and how you can begin to actively do things that will enhance the baby's feeling of being loved and wanted. Be the baby exercise. What your baby perceives, what she accepts and embraces while in the uterus, becomes part of her essence and identity, and forms the creation of a conscious ego that accepts, caresses, and acknowledges its own true self. Imagine that you are the baby developing within your mother's womb, listening to conversations, experiencing your surroundings, absorbing emotions and moods of those around you. Reflect for a few minutes on how you feel as that child who will soon be born into your family. To what degree are your parents spending time in relaxation practice to help ensure a calm birth for you? How welcome do you feel? Do you already feel that you are part of the family? How loved do you feel? Do people talk to you with love each day? What kinds of messages are you receiving from things that are said about you? How do you feel about the way your parents interact with each other? What kind of pace do your parents keep? Do you feel sure there will be time purposely created for you as you're growing up? What kind of atmosphere will you come into? Peaceful? Loving? Caring? Happy? How confident are you that you will be raised with love and patience? How calm a world is being prepared for you? How kind and loving are the people you will be living with? Do you feel that your parents will do what is necessary to ensure your gentle entry into the world? Do your parents talk in gentle, loving ways? Is each motion that you make received with joy? What kinds of sounds, music, noises do you live with? Are you being provided with the best nourishing food to help you grow and develop in a strong, healthy way? How wholesome is the air that you are breathing? Will it foster good health for you? Is your environment and your body free of smoke, alcohol, and drugs? How certain are you that you will be helped and guided toward becoming a loved and loving human being? What kind of assurance do you have that your parents will give you understanding as you learn to adjust to your strange new world? Are you confident that you will learn by guidance, not punishment? Take a moment now to quietly connect with your baby. Ask your baby to tell you what it is that she might like to add to this list. Is there a message that your baby has for you? What would make her feel more loved, more secure? Reflecting on your responses to these questions, are there some changes that you feel you can make in your baby's environment? Are there some resolutions that you, as parents, need to think about and adopt? We recommend these activities for creating lasting expressions of welcome for your baby. Write letters to the baby or keep a journal expressing your delight that he will soon be here. Save letters to present to the child later. Take pregnancy photographs of mother as well as mother and dad together. Record messages to your baby on a tape or CD in addition to letters. Videotape your birthing, complete with a birthing day message given to the baby during labor. Videotape siblings talking and listening to the baby or telling the baby a story. Involve siblings in decorating baby's room and take pictures. Start a scrapbook and include pictures that show how your body is changing as the baby develops, as well as special events like a visit from grandparents, trips to memorable places, a baby shower, a mother-baby luncheon, or a blessing way. The power and art of doing nothing. This chapter on experiencing a beautiful, calm, and tranquil birth while doing absolutely nothing will pull together all of the facets of this program that you have already studied with those parts of the program, particularly the birth, which is yet to come. It includes the rationale behind the previous chapters, the educational component, philosophy, the breathing techniques, the history of how we got to where we are, the ways of preparing your body and your mind, and relaxation with the parts of the program that are yet to come, i.e., the actual birthing experience. To understand the connection between birthing and doing nothing, we must first address a topic that is more commonly related to animals in nature. What we are talking about here is something that is not often attributed to human mothers, but is more commonly related when we speak of animal mothers in nature. What we are suggesting is that you look within the gifts that nature has already bestowed upon you, collectively called instinct. Are you out of your mind? It is futile for you to attempt to direct your body. While we do spend time teaching you breathing styles that will assist you to relax to the point where you can quiet your mind, we do not attempt to teach you how to use your mind to keep your birthing on target. Just the opposite is true. We teach you how to keep your mind out of the way while you do nothing but allow yourself to completely relax. With the help of your natural instinct, the perfect physiological order and design of your reproductive system will carry you through your entire birthing. If you keep your mind clear of chatter filled with questions, doubts, instructions, and techniques intended to teach your body how to birth, it will happen on its own. Without this interference of your mind talk, your natural instincts will take over for you. Not anything or anyone knows better than your own instinct. Of course, we know that there are devices, apparatuses, and drugs that forcefully make your body do what it already knows how to do. But how dare we presume to attempt to improve upon what nature has perfectly orchestrated and validated over centuries? Dr. Michel Audon, world-renowned birth professional, states you cannot improve upon a natural function. The answer is not to hinder it. In presenting your relaxation session, we suggest you give your body permission to take the lead, not the other way around. If we examine the definition of instinct, we find that the words and phrasing related to instinct all suggest activity that occurs naturally, without thought or initiation. Here are some words and phrases related to instinct. Spontaneous impulse, inner sense, compulsion. Action not self-initiated, reflex, predisposition. A knowing that is not based on experience or learning. A natural inherent tendency to make a complex and specific response to stimuli without involving reason. All these words indicate that the body is capable of functioning and reacting to situations without your conscious thought or consent or input. Some everyday situations that call for involuntary action would be when you attempt to maintain balance, when you cower or use your hands to protect yourself from an object hurtling toward you, when you pull back your hand from an object that is burning hot, when you startle at a sudden loud noise. When instinct is used to complete a natural body function, these occurrences are naturally set in place while nothing is needed to initiate them. Why then are birthing women asked to believe and accept that somehow the beasts in the animal kingdom are endowed with this gift of instinct while human mothers are somehow overlooked? You may not have given it a great deal of thought along the way, but you've been depending upon nature and instinct throughout your life, even before you were born. When you were in the womb, no one taught you that when your bladder was full, you needed to do something to release the urine that you were accumulating. Your bladder just released the urine into the amniotic sac. You did nothing to make it happen. From the moment that you emerged, you took your first breath. Who taught you how to take that breath? You did absolutely nothing to make it happen. Had you been allowed and assisted, you would have instinctively made your way to your mother's breast to feed, as do all mammals. It is no accident that the scent of colostrum is the same as that of amniotic fluid. Over time, as you grew and developed, with nothing to tell you how or when, you used your own special form of communication to let your parents know that you were hungry or needed a little extra comforting. When you felt secure, you could fall asleep in your parents' loving arms. What did you do to learn to fall asleep or to awaken? That's right, nothing. Fast forward to when you were a teenager. Your body changed with nothing but internal hormonal secretions to act as catalysts. You became a woman. The power of nothing was and has been alive in your human experiences in so many ways, and it is ready to perform this magnificent task easily and adeptly. You found yourself in tune with your body and knew its signals. Nothing had to teach you that you were experiencing your first love. You instinctively knew it and felt it. And when the time was right, you needed nothing to teach you how to express that love physically. But here we are today. You are pregnant or planning to become pregnant. And all of a sudden, it seems that you require advice and counseling from all directions. You are bombarded by well-intentioned friends and family who feel the need to tell their birth stories. You learn from your care providers and all the experts and women who have birthed a baby that your body is flawed. You learn that you must place your trust and power into the hands of others. Your previous trust and confidence in yourself as a vital, healthy woman quickly crumbles. All of society views you as fragile, vulnerable, and hopelessly emotional. Abraham Maslow, an American psychologist best known for his theory of a hierarchy of innate human needs, would argue that all these occurrences that pregnant women experience are necessary because human mothers have lost their ability to call upon their birthing instincts. How then do we explain the well-documented fact that since 2009 in the United States alone, 7 women in complete comas have given birth to babies unassisted? Their instinct was alive and well and allowed them to birth, in some cases, without being noticed. Hypnobirthing takes exception to the notion that human mothers have lost their power of instinct. Actually, human mothers have not lost their instinct, but have in fact been taught how to birth within the standard medical system. You will further learn that many of the protocols and procedures that now surround birth are totally contrary to natural, normal means of birthing. One has only to witness that period within a birth when it is time for the baby's descent down through the birth path to total emergence to see that there is little or no allowance for instinct. It is at this point when care providers are telling mothers that they can now assist and help themselves to birth their babies when just the opposite is true. Complete opening and thinning of the cervix ushers in an entirely new approach. Additional staff are now introduced to the birthing room. The bed on which the mother has been calmly laboring in deep relaxation is broken down, and mother is directed to scooch her bottom to the very end of the bed. Her legs are lifted onto grooved metal stirrups, or her knees are held by her birth partner or an attendant up and back toward her shoulders. It's common for hospital staff to become genuinely enthusiastic when you near completion of this phase, as they anticipate you're actively pushing your baby down to crowning. From this position, the mother is expected by most people in the room to begin to forcefully push her baby into the world, using what is known as the Valsalva maneuver, all the while with staff almost rhythmically coaching her with loud voices to keep it coming, keep it coming, keep it coming, or push hard. This can continue for as long as 2+ hours while both mother and baby become exhausted. At some point, the woman is asked to stop pushing because the baby's head has emerged and baby gets his first impression of his new world. With only his head birthed, baby receives the long tube of a suction bulb, needlessly used to remove any small remnants of mucus that may remain. With a few more surges, baby's body usually emerges on its own. Frequently, however, the baby is pulled from his mother's vaginal outlet. Hardly a scene that reflects instincts associated with birthing. Aside from all the lessons she is learning about how to birth her baby as directed, the birthing mother soon realizes that in spite of all her preparation, she has lost the calm and gentle birth she envisioned. She also becomes aware that she has been stripped of her dignity. Sadly, doctors too have been taught to birth in ways that totally exclude instinct. Many graduates go into practice never having seen a normal, instinctive, and unmedicated birth. Even more regrettable is that some medical schools are advocating that birth can best be accomplished by removing the baby surgically from its mother. Not too many years ago, the local evening news in a metropolitan city featured interviews with medical students who were to graduate within a few days. One woman announced her specialty, obstetrics. When asked why she chose obstetrics, she replied, "Because I always wanted to be a surgeon." One can only wonder how her statistics read today. Why we don't push. There's a kinder way. Pushing your baby out is a rude concept that has no place in gentle birthing, though there are occasions when it becomes necessary to move the birth along more quickly. Pushing is usually counterproductive and is actually a detriment, causing the vaginal sphincters to close ahead of the descending baby. It creates an atmosphere of stress for all involved. Very recent studies suggest that forced pushing over a long period of time can be harmful to a birthing mother and do damage to her pelvic floor. Because the mother is asked to hold her breath and push, the baby is then deprived of much-needed oxygen, causing a change in baby's heart rate. Completion of the opening phase doesn't need to mean the onslaught of a sudden flurry of activity, confusion, or additional staff on the scene. It is important that you avoid any attempt to force or rush this stage. The descent of your baby can be experienced as calmly as your first stage of labor. Many times, hypnobirthing moms just allow this phase to begin almost unnoticed, as they remain in the position of their choice and just allow the birthing phase to play out calmly and gently. Because there is no noticeable change in your behavior, only the most trained eye will detect that you are birthing your baby.